Hey everyone, it's Nancy and Bits.
Surprise. What are we doing here?
I know, what a surprise. You clicked play on this podcast and it's the two hosts of the podcast. But before we begin, we just wanted to let you know, we know you're itching to get to the finale coverage, but this is our 100th episode, Bits.
This is crazy, Nancy. 100 episodes. And what an episode to have as our 100th episode. Could we have planned that better? Absolutely not. We got to speak to the finalists of this season. Like, I guess, was that our 99th episode?
That was our 99th episode.
Okay. But wow, like what a cherry on top of an excellent run. For those that have been listening from the beginning or went back and listened from the beginning, thank you so much. This is just like a very special day to us. This was a very special episode for us. And we hope you enjoy.
Thanks for your support and happy listening. Welcome back to Compliments to the Chef. I'm your host, Nancy.
And I'm your host, Bits.
Happy finale day, Bits.
Oh, happy finale day to you, Nancy. And a glorious day it was.
A glorious occasion. This feels like when, which one of the Bennett sisters asked Mr. Darcy to throw a ball?
Oh, do throw a ball.
Yeah. Oh, do throw Kitty. A ball.
Kitty's the Kitty. Silly one.
All she does is laugh.
And go to balls.
The Bennett
sisters.
That's
all you were allowed to do as a woman back then.
Yeah, laugh.
Only laugh and go to balls.
Honestly.
And if you walked outside, you're donezo. Like, people did not like when you walked outside for any period of time.
What I would give to have.
Elizabeth Bennett.
Yeah. Honestly, though, like, what I would give to have my only expectation in life be to laugh and go to a ball. Every
Play
time
your
I...
cards right on this incredibly specific podcast. Who knows?
If anyone's listening, we will look for any monetization ideas you have.
And go to
my
your ball.
Gosh. And go to your ball. Yeah. Invite us to your balls. Would love to do that. An invitation to my balls. Anyway.
It's finale. We are burying the lead as usual. But Nancy, oh my God, what a finale it was. Truly next mm-hmm. level. And I think we can say this with some degree of confidence, having watched now 2 to 3 other Top Chef finales over the last 2 months. If people have been listening, we have been crushing other seasons in our spare time. I'm just speechless. And of course, we need yes. to get out in front and say a huge congrats to Tristan for being
huge.
Season 22 Top Chef winner. Oh my God. But these guys gave him a run for his money, and I'm excited to dive in. I just bulldozed right through Amuse Bouche, but I think we got to back up and get it going.
All right. Yes, we did blow past Amuse Bouche, but before we even do that, we have no leftovers, no potlucks this week. All we have are a few exciting announcements about what is to come post-finale. Bits, what do we got going on?
Well, Nancy, like anybody out there, we've got busy summers ahead of us. Mm-hmm. So while we, let's say, cool off a bit from this incredible run of Top Chef, Nancy and I are going to do a little silly summer series. We're going to be covering and recapping our favorite summer blockbusters of the culinary persuasion.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking Chef. We're talking Jiro Dreams of Sushi. We're talking Ratatouille. We're talking Mystic Pizza. We're talking some other ones that I'm not remembering off the top of my
yep.
head.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
We're going to have a silly little time. It's going to be what it sounds like. We're watching some old favorite nostalgic flicks, and then we'll be breaking them down on the pod, talking about how food shows up in these movies. We'll bring on some guests, maybe some repeat guests, who knows? But yeah, if you want more deets on that, you can follow us on Instagram at compliments_to_the_chef_pod.
Follow
it's been
us.
A while since we plugged that.
Oh my God. We won't do it many times this episode because we have to plug these incredible chefs.
Yes.
But
so
follow us on Instagram, subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts, and leave us a review.
Yes, reviews
as we wrap
really
out the season.
Us.
They really, yes. really help us. Thank you for all that you do. We love you, and we do read Reddit, so thank you for everything you say there too. And then we want to make sure, as everyone knows who listens to the pod, or if you haven't yet listened to a finale episode, we will be giving our trademarked compliments to the chefs at the end of this episode. So stick around to hear all the nice things we have to say about our season 22 chef testants. But Bits, without further ado, for the last time in season 22, let's begin.
Okay, Nancy, we didn't blow past amuse-bouche reactions because in our excitement, I remember they come right now. So, Nancy, what is your amuse-bouche reaction to this final, if that's at all possible?
It's so hard for me because I exist in hyperbole, but I think I sincerely mean it when I say this may have been the best finale of all time. In terms of skill and performance, like, I think that, oh my God, I was having so many thoughts watching this episode. And if I were to put it succinctly, I think season 20 World All-Stars ushered in a new generation, a new chapter of Top Chef. And I think that season 22 is like really the first divine manifestation of this new era of Top Chef. And I think that we are seeing food and chefs and ideas and narratives that we have truly never seen on this show. And it feels like an entirely new take on the Top Chef format. And for that, we thank you.
I could not agree more. I know you – we both exist in hyperbole. So who knows? Someone check us on this. But I had the same thought. I was like, you know, when we watched the World All-Star season – you have the thought, like, how does it get better than this?
Right.
And season 22 is how it gets better than that.
Yes.
This season's incredible. And, you know, my amuse-bouche reaction to steal some vibes from Gregory Gourdet, who was at the judges' table this evening. Yes. Quote, "We are at three restaurants and we're having a good time."
Perfect summation of the night.
Oh, my God. It was such a fun – there is nothing more fun. Well, there's one thing more fun than watching a bunch of extremely, respected chefs and restaurateurs enjoy great food for up-and-coming chefs, and that would be to eat it ourselves, but alas. Yes. So, Nancy, I think we just need to get into this episode because there is a lot packed into this finale.
Yes.
First of all, we got some friends back in the house.
No. Bits, I'm sorry. I hate to interrupt you. We need to start somewhere else first, which the episode opens with Leonardo da Vinci's Last Supper.
How did we forget? Oh, my God.
Famed Italian painter whom I can identify. Okay?
Oh, my God, Nancy. Yes. Michelangelo called. He wants his painting credit back. From last step, he heard us. He was like, wait.
He heard us. You're like, who are these dumbasses in the year 2025 talking to themselves?
You know what's funny? When I saw them in that empty room looking at the Last Supper, classic. Also, just love that. I told you we get a Last Supper this episode.
I know. I was laughing so hard that we got the Last Supper.
They weren't very on the note. You know, they weren't like too cute about that either. Like it you know, they didn't, we're like, look at us at the Last Supper for the Last Supper
about,
like,
to make the Last Supper of the
season. They could have been more annoying about it, I think, but it was perfect because I was proven perfect. Right,
they were not annoying about it. If anything, they were incredibly insightful about it in a way where 100%. I was like, damn, I do need Northwestern to revoke my art history degree because I could not get anywhere that they got to.
The thought that I had when they're standing in this empty room alone, though, getting access to see this painting is such a feat. Like, they should have just included that in the prize package all season. Like, and you get to see the Last Supper in a room alone. Like,
well, Bits would know this because she was just in Milan.
I was in Milan. Look at us.
And you have to reserve tickets for that, like, days in it, months in advance.
Months. Yeah, months. It's crazy.
I was thinking about all the people who had their tickets canceled because Top Chef needed to film there for an hour.
Oh, my God.
Okay, the other thing. So then we leave the Last Supper. Shout out to Da Vinci. And we go to meet Kristen and Tom. Curiously absent, Gail, but whatever. Tom in what can only be described as a strong turtleneck. Yeah. I mean, that thing was
That's
robust.
An Italian turtleneck. That's only wear that in Italy.
Tom is feeling himself Friday in this turtleneck. My gosh. But we are given my favorite prompt of all time. Cook us the meal of your life. A beautiful prompt that we get every season, except for season 10 for some reason, which is super weird. And we are told that they are going to be making a four-course progressive meal. Period. End of story. Love it.
Love it. And, simple, to the point.
Yep. And to your earlier point, Bits, we've got some friends in the house.
Zubair. Oh my God. I know that like they're not allowed to tell us this, but like both Zubair and Lana we have spoken to since their time on Top Chef.
And Bailey.
And Bailey. And they all damn, poker face.
Insane. I mean, I guess that's why the PR people are on these calls with us, because they're really making sure these people don't say shit. I would have never guessed that these people were all in the same room. Speaking of all these people in the same room, in this finale episode, we have not one, not two, not three, but four of the five members of our fantasy Top Chef team on the screen.
Oh my God. That should count for something. We need to talk to them about
that. Yeah, we need to talk to them and ask them to amend the rules, because almost every single person on our team, with the exception of Henry, was on the screen this episode.
Oh my God. Great, great spot.
Incredible. So yeah, we had our first podcast guest, Bailey, and our entire fantasy team in one shot. It was incredible.
Oh my God. Wow. Well, that's just us not trying. So I guess the moral of the lesson, the moral of the story here is don't try.
You'll don't just do any research. Go lucky. Off vibes.
Yeah. Okay. So we see our friends walk in. Zubair is... So let's talk about this, right? Because we've had past finales where the sous chef can really make or break a chef's win in the finale. And I do think that over time they have improved on this formula. You know, in earlier season, there was like such a degree of randomness. There was like knife draws and, you know, you kind of got stuck with people. There were later seasons where, you know, it was like picking for kickball, you know, like just running down the line and who do you want on your team? What was your approach on this sort of, you know, this sous chef situation versus sous chef situations we've seen in the past?
So glad you asked. The fact that they clearly picked ahead of time and they were only allowed to pick one confirms my hypothesis that they spent 100% of the finale budget on the Delta One flights to Italy for the three finalists, because normally they fly out the whole cast and they get to pick right then there regardless of where they are. In Kentucky, they flew out like 10 people to Macau,
which
is really hard to get to. And yet they only flew out three people to Milan, which is a direct flight from most cities in the U.S. Like, how expensive were those flights? I need to know. They were staying at the Radisson. You only get one pick. Like, what the fuck is going on with the rest of the budget here?
But it also didn't seem to be an issue. And maybe I'm trying to think about, you know, it's four courses. The food isn't, you know, it's not like a huge I sound so stupid saying this. Like, the portions weren't that big. Like, it's not like you need two people because there's a lot of food. It's like the technical piece. But you know what? Yes. I personally really liked only having one sous chef. I think it reduces the margin of error. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'll talk about it a bit, like, when we talk to Lana and Bailey. But I think that they use the sous chefs well. And I thought it was really interesting to reflect on, you know, who our favorite chefs and finalists see as like great collaborators and, you know, who they trust at this, you know, moment in time. So it was so cool to see Zubair in the room. It's so validating, you know, like, yes, dude,
he's great. Amazing. And trust is a really interesting word, because I think that really played into Schwei's pick of Paola.
Yeah.
So Paola, I think, gained a ton of respect. Not that she didn't have respect, but I think her performance in Restaurant Wars and the way she carried her team, the way she behaved with her team,
totally
just has cemented her in this season's cohort as like VIP or MVP, excuse me. And I was really happy to understand that that was the reason why Shuai picked her, because I was surprised to see that. Because I was also thinking, like, who, you can tell who's friends with whom, kind of like who's buddy buddy. And I really actually was racking my brain. I was like, I actually don't know who Shuai's homies are. And then when Paula came out, yeah, I was like, it was more like this makes sense.
I couldn't remember when they crossed paths, but they were on restaurant. They were on the team together for restaurants. So, okay. Yeah.
And then Bailey and Lana, we usually see this with the last few women remaining, that there's a ton of camaraderie.
Yeah.
I think there is definitely a sense of like one of us has to win this.
Yeah.
And so, totally. And which is really nice and pretty unique to Top Chef when it comes to competition shows and women. But I was not surprised to see Lana show up for Bailey.
Yeah, we don't see that much on other reality shows between
women encouraging each other to make the right decision.
Can you imagine Love is Blind? Like, he doesn't want me, but he could love you.
Or like just Summer House, like Lindsay Hubbard being like, sure, do what you want, girl. I'm not going to meddle in this at all.
Yeah, there's not a lot of girl energy happening over there.
Mm. But anyway, anti-shout-outs to season 11 of Vanderpump Rules. But this is a Top Chef podcast, so let's discuss. But yeah, so I wasn't surprised to see Lana or Bailey pick Lana. I was pleasantly surprised to see Shuai pick Paula. And then I was delighted to see Zubair back on our screens.
I 100% agree. So before we headed to dinner at the judges' house. Let's talk a little high level about the meal, the sort of like menu planning and the through line for these chefs, because I thought to what we hear later in the episode from Tom, each of these chefs to varying degrees, but like there was still like extremely high bar cleared in terms of having a really meaningful through line in their menu. So Shuai took it in the direction of Chinese techniques and meals that have influenced him. And I loved this for him because it was, once he locked in the season, that was 100% his strategy and his pocket. And it was so fitting for me to see that that is where he took this finale and brought in like the influences of the place, but also influences of dishes and food he grew up with. What do you think, Nancy?
Very well put. I would say that is a great summation of who we have seen Shuai develop into. He's not totally traditional Chinese flavors and representing my culture. He's not totally a Southern boy. He's somewhere in between. He appreciates all of it. And I loved just seeing that play out. And every time he's cooked that way in the competition, he's won. Whenever he feels confident in this overlap of the two cultures that he identifies with, he has excelled. So it made sense that he went this route. And it also is just fun seeing people doing what they do best and not like, you know, choking at the 11th hour on like, oh, does this represent me? Does this not?
Yeah, I want to show them a different side of me. No, show them the same side.
yes.
Everybody likes that side.
Okay, thank you for reminding me of this. We have, as we said last year, there are sort of three approaches to the finale. There's one approach, which is, I planned this menu before I was even cast on the show. And this is what I'm doing. I am not compromising for anything. That's number one. Number two is I want to paint and narrate my journey on the show through food and how I've grown. And then strategy number three is I want to show you a different side of myself, which is what you just said. I would say we pretty much got all number one with a sprinkling of number two this episode.
Yeah. I mean, knowing my menu, I think that has taken a different shape in later seasons than earlier seasons where like, you know, earlier seasons, what that meant is like, oh, my meal was planned before I even came on the show. It was like, I have some recipes and they're bangers and like, I'm going to put them out. What that means for this season is like, I have an intimate relationship with this plate or this ingredient or the story behind this dish. And it's important for me to bring it to this forum. So but 100%. Like, and nobody, I'm so glad. And honestly, number three, the lack of number three here is exactly why this season was awesome, because basically everybody was just like, I know my food. Like, I know what is meaningful to me, and thank God for it. Yes. Okay. Lana. Bailey. Mm-hmm. Giro Stravagante. How do we not get this term earlier in the season? Because we would have been saying it every episode.
Giro Stravagante means an unconventional way of doing something, which was the most Bailey term I've ever heard.
Yes, yes, yes. And I've had a good think about Bailey, Bailey's arc, because it's been one of the it's just been really interesting, because it's one of those moments where it's a bit of a chicken and egg situation, where it's mm-hmm. like, I can't remember once we've sort of locked onto like that as her narrative, or like that as her story, everything really fell into place after the fact. And it makes me wonder, looking all the way back to the start of the season, if there it And I think it was. I think it was there the whole time, and it just wasn't – there was no label on it, or no, like, mm-hmm. Acknowledgement of quite – you know, we'll talk about it when we get to the food for this episode, but the dessert that she put out, and Claire Smith just saying, like, ah, I know who Bailey is now. And I felt that way about Bailey. I took away the same reaction after watching her this episode.
Yep. Completely agree. To me, Giro Stravagante was just funny, because there's so many words in like German and Japanese that define an emotion or something that we do not have words for in English. And this was the first example of that in Italian that I've ever come across, of like doing something in an unconventional way and there being this concept that Italians hold in their head. I just loved that.
I loved it.
And I agree with you that it was this perfect button on who Bailey is and the type of food that she makes. And I agree. Like, I think that I've gained a real appreciation for her. I think that she really is unapologetically herself. Mm-hmm. I grew a real soft spot for her when we interviewed her, because she was our first chef interview, which was a huge deal. And, like, she just, I think, brought to that interview and to the table this season – a confidence in her Giro Stravagante that is really easy to critique but hard to hate. And I appreciate that about her.
Yes.
She's got chutzpah, as my people would say.
I love it. Yes, Nancy, 100%. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, talk to us about Tristan's menu.
Yes. So Tristan's menu was uncolonizing colonized food. Essentially, we wanted to do a progressive Afro-Caribbean cuisine, thinking about all the different ways in which these cultures have come in contact with Western cultures and the ways in which that they have both been influenced by and colonized by them. And so he was trying to extract things from food of his Afro-Caribbean roots that are both familiar, and then putting what's familiar and twisting it and giving it a spin with different types of ingredients or techniques. That was very long-winded, I would say. But I think Tristan, I would put in the Buddha category, and even like the Danny Garcia category in this episode, of just like, he had this on lock. He has been thinking about this menu and what he wants to showcase and the relationship he has with this food since the day he got the call that he was coming on the show.
Yeah, yeah.
And that, again, is not to say that he's stubborn or hasn't changed his ways as a result of the show. Like, that he even had to for his first dish was like, actually, did you know that Italy tried to invade Ethiopia? Like, a crazy moment in history that no one really talks about. So he definitely incorporates the circumstances he is in that he did not prepare to be in. But this is something he's wanted to showcase for a very long time. And he got his stage and he performed.
100%.
Big time.
Yeah.
Big time.
Yeah. I mean, I can't wait to talk about the food, because they all took it in such a specific, but just a specific but fun and thoughtful. And I'm not going to say anything better than we already said. So I just want to talk about Tom and Gail and Kristen cooking them dinner.
Yes.
Nancy, I know you know this, but I went to Milan recently, and
Could I get some recommendations from you, by the way?
Well, the first thing I was going to recommend was the tortellini and brodo, because that is amazing. Like, I didn't
Nectar
even
of
know.
The gods.
Nectar of the gods. Mm-hmm. Like, it seems so boring, and in that way, it's amazing. Like, I think every culture yep. has that, right? Like, I would say, like, the proximate is, like, a matzo ball soup, a chicken soup, a tortellini and brodo. Like, mm-hmm. it really sang for me.
A ramen. I love
everybody
a hot
loves
and sour
a soup and a noodle. Oh,
everyone loves a soup and a noodle. Yeah, tortellini and brodo is, like, absolute number one soup, I think, in my mind.
Yeah.
So it was just delicious to see them prepare that. Something about Tom in a short sleeve shirt taking that porchetta out of the oven. I was like,
oh my God.
Am I attracted to Tom Colicchio for the first time in my life?
Oh, he was so locked in, and I love it. I want to eat at that table so bad. Like, so
not
bad.
Only was he locked in, but also he did use this opportunity to plug his book, Why I Cook.
Which we need to read and recap on this pod.
Yes, that will
Maybe
be part
that's
of the summer blockbuster series.
Yeah, that'll be a summer
blockbuster.
Summer
book club.
Summer book club and summer blockbuster. We're taking it to the beach.
The streets.
We're taking it to the beach and the streets.
We're taking it to the beach.
But I am
That's
taking
so
it to
good.
The
that's the motto. I can already see the logo in my head.
Taking it to the beach.
Okay.
Yeah.
But enough about summer blockbuster. Let's talk about the food this episode, because we've got 12 dishes to
We've got 12 dishes, but I think we need to set the stage. Okay, we're at an incredible restaurant in Milan, mm-hmm. Ristorant Cracco. We have an incredible lineup of guest judges around the
Oh,
horn.
My
We've
God.
Carlo Cracco, who's the owner of Cracco.
Yep.
Sarah Cicciolini, Claire Smith, who's a Michelin-starred chef. We got Richard Blaise back in the house.
We got Gregory Gourdet.
Oh, my God.
At the table.
What a get.
We've got Hunter Lewis, we've got Jeannie Kwan, we've got Santiago Lastra, and I think that's everyone.
Yeah.
That's everyone.
It was an all-star table.
Stacked.
Definitely wouldn't want to serve that table if I was there, but
nope.
This crew was psyched
Unfazed.
For the honor. Unfazed.
Unfazed.
Yes.
Claire Smith, by the way, notably was the host of Restaurant Wars for World All-Stars at her kitchen in
London. Oh my gosh,
London,
that's right. I completely
and
forgot.
And she is a mentor to Buddha and his wife.
Oh, I love that. I love that mm-hmm. even more. I love that
love
even
it.
More.
Yeah. Top Chef is really, like, insane with the prestige with these Michelin star chefs.
Well, I think it's to your point. Like, this World All-Stars moved it into a different world entirely. It is now there is an open line of conversation between yep. Top Chef and James Beard, for instance, that was not there before.
Yeah.
And maybe on the Michelin star front as well. Mm-hmm. Okay, Nancy, I'm sorry I kept you away from the food for too long. Let's get into the food.
Gobble gobble.
Gobble gobble. First course is up. Let's take it away with Bailey.
Yeah. So Bailey starts out with polpo e mozz, which is octopus and mozzarella with tomato dashi and giardiniera. Bonkers. No. Bonkers.
We've got mixing cheese and seafood, but, you know, she came out and she was like, I think that I need to get this octopus super charred and it'll balance out the creamy. And what did mm-hmm. we hear from Kristen when she took a bite? Wow, the mozzarella really helped to tame the char.
Yep.
People loved this dish.
I this goes for every single thing that Bailey said and kind of every single thing that Tristan said this episode. There was nothing about everything that I have experienced with food personally up until this point in my life that could help me conceive of what these dishes looked like or tasted like.
Nancy, I'm so glad you said that. Yes. Yes. Like, in my wildest dreams, could I fathom it?
I could not visualize a single word that came out of these people's mouths. Schwei, I got. Yeah. But when we just have them talking to camera, I was like, this is gibberish to me.
Yeah.
You could be saying anything. And yet, we got superb food from both of them and Schwei too. But I think that Bailey and Tristan were somehow in a different stratosphere of the English language putting
yes.
together words that I did not understand.
Well, and we got that conversation between the two of them at the end of this where, you know, Tristan is like, I thought I knew Italian food. And then like, I see what you're doing. I don't even know the words you're using. And she's like, I mean, right back at you. So maybe we're not alone in that regard. But anyways, heavy hitting dish from her. Speaking of Shuai, he did a pan of puri with scarlet red shrimp, gazpacho verde.
This sounded so good. I love pani puri. It's just so fun. I believe the feedback here was that it was most people's favorite bite of the night.
Yeah.
Which is great. He started off with a bang. It was perfectly balanced. The acidity, the heat, the herbal notes. Claire Smith really enjoyed this dish, which
yeah.
I mean, like, I feel like Shuai could be like, I could die now after one dish.
This
woman with
out.
Three Michelin stars just said she loved my shit. So,
my God.
Peace. Gonna go and just enjoy myself in Milan now.
Honestly.
Good
I've
on
got
him.
Some recommendations.
Why don't you DM Shuai and be like, hey, next time you're in Italy, in Milan specifically.
Hey, you should have let me know. You were there before me, but oh well. Okay. No, we got to talk about Tristan's strategy.
Tristan's
for
first
plate
dish.
One. Because literally he took two different fishes and prepped them up to the wire. It was down to a monkfish versus cod. We end up with a monkfish, turmeric, turnips with bacala mbongo, which was like the sauce that he put on top.
Mm-hmm.
He went monkfish. So we had an interesting conversation at the table, and I think one that kind of followed Tristan this episode, and maybe to your earlier point, Nancy, kind of supports your earlier point, which is like, you know, fine dining is meant to, did you make this earlier point? This idea, like fine dining is essentially, you're not sure if you like it or not. Like, is this how it's supposed to go? Like, I feel like for Tristan, he rode so hard on the edge of like new, novel and precise that you couldn't not appreciate that what he did was brilliant, but you don't have any frame of reference to get you there yet. You know what I mean? Like, it's sort of like the first time you're having it. I don't know that like maybe characterized the monkfish dish. I think for the monkfish, it was simply like the fish looked like it was under, but it didn't taste under. And so, I don't know. I just thought that to me was like kind of a broader takeaway of Tristan for the night. Like, he really leaned into like, being at kind of the cutting edge of fine dining and making you question your palate and push your palate.
Yes. I did not make that point earlier. That was entirely you, just organically coming up with something. So congratulations. But, I would say that I take your point about fine dining. To me, I think fine dining is about like opening up new worlds through food.
Yeah.
These days. That's what fine dining. It used to be about French precision and technique and all that stuff. And it's still about that. But I think that this new generation of chefs, it's all about opening up new worlds. Mm. And I think that's exactly what Tristan is doing. And to do that, you're going to be confused. You're going to be confronted with very unfamiliar things. But at the end of the day, you're going to be like, sorry, I'm going to stop saying like. At the end of the day, you're going to think to yourself, wow, I just had an entirely novel experience that I have never had before, and it made me think X, or it made me feel ABC.
Yeah.
And that is what I believe these chefs are going for when it comes to this new generation of fine dining restaurants.
Yeah, I so well put. And I think they all stuck the landing on that in this episode. And okay. Love it. Course 2 is coming out. Okay, Bailey's course 2, I wanted to gobble up because she made an Annalini Alpini roasted porcini filling. Porcinis are in season, in case you missed it. People were loving that fact. Cabbage and brodo. This one to me was maybe the one that I could theoretically taste through the screen. But she drew inspiration from the Canadian mountains. You know, now she's close to the Alps. The Italian dude at the table, I forget which one of him, was nodding on the porcini in season like, hell yeah, brother.
Hell yeah.
Like, you got porcinis in here? Like, this, she played, I mean, of course, Bailey really played it well, knowing the people at the, not knowing the people yes. at the table, but knowing like, this is in Italy, this is Northern Italy. Claire Smith found it really wholesome. The pecans were a big hit in it. Yep. And it just tasted like grandma used to make, you know?
Ugh, for an Italian woman to say that to Bailey, who's like this wonderfully Midwestern woman, it just, I loved that.
Loved it.
I loved it. And then for Schwei, Schwei is making his gigantic soup dumpling.
Gigante.
Gigante. This one I also could, well, all of Schwei's menu, I was sort of like, okay, I can understand what that's going to be. He made a pork and king crab raviolo soup dumpling with a charred leek vinaigrette. This thing was huge.
Yeah.
And I think that truly the only critique here was they wanted more soup. Like, he was nervous about the dough, nothing about the dough. He was nervous about the filling, nothing about the filling. And then they were just like, give us more soup.
Do you think that's all? But do you think the filling leaked out when he decided to boil it? Is that maybe what happened? I don't know. No. I don't think so. I think it was just, it was just the proportions or the ratios.
I think they just wanted more soup. Simple as that.
Simple as that. Can be. Tristan's second dish, he calls it, gave it the kind of like name Durango, which is a conjunction of Durawat, which is chicken, with it's Durawat chicken. So polo marengo with injera shrimp toast and an egg yolk jam. I think I left out some accoutrement there, but basically inspired by a traditional Ethiopian spicy chicken stew. People were going bonkers for the chicken breast.
Yeah. When have we ever seen anyone go bonkers for a chicken breast? Except for me.
Yeah, except for you before chicken was dead to you.
Before chicken was dead to me.
Nancy, I had the thought looking at his plate, it took me like a minute to be like, wait, which is the chicken and which is the toast? It was avant-garde that I was like, wait.
I will say that Tristan's entire meal made me feel like, am I incredibly stupid? I was like,
yes.
Yes. And yeah, the answer is yes. You who watches a reality television competition show for 22 seasons and then decides everyone needs to hear my thoughts, you are dumb.
But I mean, that's, yes, is the thing. Like, this to me is proof, like, I could never, ever do this. Like, you look at some of the earlier seasons of Top Chef and you're like, oh, like, I mean, I can make that. I could never make this. Never. I didn't even know which was which. So, yeah. I mean, this dish was huge. Next level. Chicken beautiful. The shrimp toast. Star.
Oh, my gosh. They were obsessed with the shrimp toast. And then Zubair was like, you got to make some money off of this. It's like the I think you should leave. I got to figure out a way to make money.
All right. So let's head into the third course of the dinner. Talk to us about Bailey's dish.
Grunberg. She was saying that Sarah, who is the executive chef at Monteverde, which we hear Bailey talk about a lot, an Italian restaurant in Chicago, is actually from the South and she grew up fishing for redfish. So this is her tribute to her. It's a blackened fish with Calabrian chili crunch and whipped tahini.
Mm.
I agree just from the description alone that this dish felt like a departure from the rest of Bailey's menu.
Yeah.
It sounded yummy, don't get me wrong, but if we're talking about a progressive meal, this felt like an outlier. And I think that was the general feeling at the table, that it was tasty. We'll get to talking about the protein in a second, but that it felt like it was, to use Gail's quote, it felt like a dish for someone else rather than to represent who Bailey is.
Yeah. And like we were saying earlier, so Gail's point on this too was it didn't feel like sunny, happy Bailey food. And I loved that description. I love that. I love hearing how the judges think about these chefs' food in a very, 140 characters or less. And
yeah,
it didn't feel like sunny, happy Bailey food. But yeah, let's talk about the protein, because we see during the prep that the protein is actually cooked by Lana. And then we get a talking head of Lana that's like, oh, I don't know if it was me. Like, I'd want to be cooking the protein.
Mm-hmm. But there's also an important moment there. The critical moment that we see is Lana saying, do you want me to take these off when they're medium rare, like a bit undercooked? Because I think the proper temperature for salmon is medium, not medium rare.
Yeah.
And Bailey says no. So
I missed that.
Clearly, yeah. Lana is taking instruction. If I think Lana's saying, like, I personally would have cooked the proteins myself, but she chose not to. So I'm just going to cook the protein exactly how she wants the protein to be cooked.
Which is exactly what you should do.
Yeah, that's what a good sous chef does. And I think Lana did it. And I think Lana just took instruction from Bailey. I don't think that pretty much I want to get ahead of anyone saying like, well, Lana sank it or like, you know, Lana sank that dish for Bailey. I don't think that's what happened.
100% agree with you.
And by the way, you never saw Bailey say like, well, Lana cooked it. Which is important.
Right. Because they're nice people. Exactly. Okay. Shuai's third dish. He did a play on ossobuco, which is a very popular dish in Milan. So he did a tansu ossobuco with sweet and sour radicchio, long beans and grits, and some burgundy truffles on top. That kind of threw me.
Me too, especially because he didn't talk about it at all until it showed up on the table. And I
saw
the dish and I was thinking to myself, are those truffles? I feel like I can identify truffles on that dish. And there it is.
Yeah.
The general vibe here was that I think there was too much going on in this dish. It was a bit confusing. And then also the grits had a bit too much dairy.
Yeah, which is interesting because he was really careful about that last week with the polenta where he was like, I don't want the polenta to overpower the barbecue duck. Like, I want the richness to come from the duck. And that the same thing could be said for this. You know, the same strategy would have been successful here. But yeah, so I think for both Bailey and Shuai, this course was maybe the like the tiny stumble.
Yep. I would agree. I would agree. But then we have Tristan, who made an oxtail milanese of Milan, bits would know, with Carolina Gold grits, bone marrow, remoulade. Carolina Gold really gave me a bit of PTSD from my old roommate who became obsessed with Carolina Gold rice. Are you familiar with this?
No, not this story.
But Carolina Gold rice, are you familiar with that?
Yes. Yes, I know it exists.
So for the listeners out there, very quickly, there is a movement in the American South by a bunch of chefs to revive some of the original crops that grew there, one of them being this strand of rice called Carolina Gold. And who's the chef who always comes on Top Chef? He's the Southern guy. He's a huge deal. I can't believe I'm forgetting his name. This is so embarrassing, but I will look it up. And he was the big pioneer to revive this particular strain of rice that has more or less gone extinct. And it's really expensive rice. You have to special order it. It's like only harvest once a year, yada, yada, yada. And my old roommate, who, you know, fancied himself a bit of a sophisticate, ordered this rice in such an insane quantity and just filled our freezer with it because you're supposed to store it in the freezer. And then when said roommate broke our lease and moved across the country and left me to pick up the pieces, I had to deal with all of this fucking rice. And I will say that out of spite, I did throw it in the trash and filmed a video of me doing it and sent it to my old roommate because I was pissed. God.
How much money worth did you throw in the trash, I wonder?
So much. And I more regret it from a food waste perspective. I'm embarrassed to say that I did that. But anyway, let's talk about
No, that's Tristan's helpful, though. I actually didn't know that about Carolina Gold rice. So,
well, now you know.
Now
so,
you know. The more you know.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about what the judges said about this dish?
I mean, they were just absolutely gagged that those grains were so singular and apart.
Present.
So he cooked it more like a pasta. They were like, oh my God. Gregory Gourdet in particular was like, the oxtails cooked perfectly. Like it wasn't pulled too early. The Italian dude, no words. It's perfect. This was not a stumble round for him. This was very much a strong showing. And that brings us into the fourth course where
quickly,
you know,
Sean Brock.
Oh, yes.
He comes on Top Chef a lot. That's the chef. Okay, let's go to the fourth course.
Okay, so Bailey comes out with maybe one of my favorite dishes of the night. She made a torta di pizzelle, which is basically like created a almost part tiramisu, part zucca, which is like roasted squash filling. She had like the cookies as layers. I loved the look of this personally, if it were up to me. And, you know, I already mentioned this earlier, but Claire Smith's commentary on this was like, this really brought it home. I can mm-hmm. see Bailey's style clearly now. And I had the same thought. I was like, oh yeah. my God. Yes, I get it. Really, people were really loving the use of the zucca. It was like almost a more interesting like pumpkin spice tiramisu. I think it was beautiful. And honestly, I just mm-hmm. think it was such an homage to Italian cuisine. And you could just tell all of the Italian judges at the table, like there was a lot of just like respect and just yep. warmth towards this dish.
Yeah, it was really sweet to see. And I think it was like this beautiful sort of American-Italian twist.
Right.
And she just nailed it. She hit the nail on the head with this. And I was very happy for her. But I think the dessert I am most interested in talking about is actually Schwei's dessert.
Yes.
So Schwei, all episode, was saying, I'm embarrassed to say it, but my favorite dessert is ambrosia. Ambrosia, ambrosia. And he would always say, yeah, you know, I know it's a bit low class. I know it's a bit white trash. I know it's a bit gross. I know it's a bit this. He kept caveating this dessert. And I realized, I mean, I've heard of ambrosia. The word is in like nectar of the gods or the food of the gods, they eat. But I was thinking like, what? He keeps dogging himself about ambrosia. What is this? So I looked it up because I, as a coastal elite from the Northeast, have never heard of ambrosia. Ambrosia is an American variety of fruit salad originating in the southern United States. Most ambrosia recipes contain canned or fresh pineapple, canned mandarin orange slices or fresh orange sections, mini marshmallows, and coconut.
Mm-hmm.
So then when he comes out with this dessert, which is pear and orange jello with pistachio, Italian meringue, and coconut, that is exactly ambrosia to a T, just elevated to an incredibly beautiful place.
It's like almost a bastardized pavlova.
Yes.
Like, yes, it's like, well, if you took pavlova and like all and the shelf stable version of a pavlova. But yeah, I similarly had to look it up because I was like, I think I know it. There's like the canned stuff in it, but so cool. This is maybe the one thing that I would be so keen to try of I don't know. I mean, how could you pick one dish from this night? But this to me, I mean, they were just so excited about it. I would have loved to understand what all the fuss was about. Like, so mm-hmm. light, but also bursting with flavor. Every bite is different.
Yeah. Gregory was really, really feeling cool. This dish.
Yeah.
And so was Claire Smith, which was fabulous. But I love seeing Gregory get excited about something.
I know. I do.
I do
too.
It's best.
And we
so let's round it out.
Oh, look at us.
Jinx.
Jinx.
Now we can never talk again. Podcast over. You're welcome, everyone. You don't have to listen to us anymore.
Course four.
Oh, you broke the. You broke it. Oh, you owe me a Coke.
Oh, God. Now I have. I owe you a punch buggy or something. okay. Tristan's fourth course was a pone tropical root vegetable cake with a kazarip sorbet. We get a chapeau from Krakow, which is just hats off to this is
hats
a chef
off.
Both Kristen and Richard Blaze come yes. down on the same side of this, which was like maybe my earlier point on just the sort of pushing the line of taste
mm-hmm.
belongs mm-hmm. in this dish conversation. But both of them were like, I understand that this is something, and it's something really brilliant, but is it delicious?
Yes, like, I believe the exact quote is, it's interesting, but is it delicious?
Yeah, which is kind of, and I really want to tease that out. I would love to like talk to Richard and Kristen like 2 to 3 days after they gave that commentary, once they have some time to like let it sit with them. Like, because on one side of the coin, I could see it being, there is a bit of a bit of the context is forcing that read, which is, you know, we know Tristan makes excellent food, has an incredible point of view, has challenged us in the past. And so is it trying to rationalize a dish that misses the mark in this moment? Or is it I'm having a hard time articulating what I'm trying to say, but like based
I understand what you mean, you know, context of
Tristan as a chef. Yeah.
Tristan is so high performing. He is so talented. I think what we were saying about fine dining in this era being about introducing new ideas. The reality is any dish of this caliber isn't going to be bad or gross,
right,
or, you know, difficult to eat or nauseating, but it could just be unsuccessful.
Right.
And I think that that's what Richard Blais is getting at. Like, this dish does not taste bad. It is executed well. The textures are right, all these things, but is it good?
Yeah.
And I think this is a really interesting thing of you can have every single talent and technique down, but that does not necessarily make excellent food.
Yeah.
And I think this is the very first time in all of season 22 where we've seen Tristan fall prey to that, because he's so confident in his skills. He's so good at what he does, but he seems to always know the limitations of just how far that can get you without food being, but your food still has to be delicious. And this is the one time I think we've seen, and by the way, not everyone agreed with this.
Right.
Because a lot of the chefs absolutely loved this dish. But I think to really expand on the critique that Richard Blais and Kristen were making was this is the one time we've seen Tristan let his technique get the better of him and be an overpower delicious food.
Yeah, like it was more about the idea of the dish than the dish.
Yep, exactly.
Which I think, you know, someone like Tom or someone like Carlo, that's what they love about food. Like they actually love the idea about the food and the technique. And so for them, like that, I think maybe that is in part the enjoyment of it.
Yep.
And I think that Kristen has always been, or always, I mean, the last two seasons from what I can understand is like, she really does lead with like, is this good? Like that could go super high, you know, fine dining. It could go really like kind of humble and comfort. And so, yeah, I think that was interesting to watch this play out, especially as like sort of the final dish on the final episode of this season, which has really played with this question, I think, too, of just like, what is the line between these?
Yes, absolutely. And as we sort of turn to Judge's Table, I think that we've covered a lot of what they said at Judge's Table. And I think that we maybe don't need to go into extreme detail, because I think they sat at Judge's Table and they're like, these were all incredible meals. Like we kind of have nothing bad to say, but something I do want to hover on and linger on is Tom Colicchio this entire season. Tom made a comment, first off, unprecedented. I would like to go back and see, but Tom went into the kitchen after the first course, which he never does, and said, I just want you guys to know that you nailed it, which is incredible encouragement, but that he's a pretty stone cold guy when it comes to judging, that he felt so compelled to leave his seat in the middle of judging and tell them that they did well. That is such a testament to the caliber of this food.
Yeah.
And I think that that is encapsulated in a comment he made at Judge's Table, which is he said, you know, people think that I'm really good at hiding my emotions. I'm paraphrasing. He's like, but essentially I actually really show my emotions, but I've never been so moved by food on this show as I have been this season.
Yeah.
And I think he even said it when they were, I'm just piecing together so many data points.
Right.
But when they were at the dinner with the finalists and the judges, and Tom said, you know, I've had this opportunity to mentor people, you hear him being very reflective about his time on the show and the role that he plays and what he gets out of it.
Yeah.
And it is just so beautiful and fulfilling, I think, as a viewer to see the judges so excited by a season, particularly a judge like Tom, who is famously, you know, harsh.
Yeah.
And the harshest critic, that he is just on cloud nine. And I think because this season is why he does Top Chef. It's about seeing new talent. Yeah. It's about nurturing new talent. It's about celebrating new talent and giving them a platform to grow.
Yes.
And I think in all of these finalists, he found that. And a lot of the chefs this season, he found that. And he's just fit as a fiddle over there. He's happy as a clam.
Yeah, it's such a good barometer of,
season.
The season and the room. And I couldn't agree more.
It just feels like this culmination of a beautiful season. And the judges are deliberating. They call the chefs back in. And lo and behold, season 22, Top Chef is Tristan, which is, so beautiful to see.
Amazing. He really earned it. This was such a fun season to watch him. He some chefs come on and they have, this noticeable arc. For Tristan, it was just, I personally feel like such an appreciation to get to spend time with his point of view for so many episodes, because there wasn't a moment where that point of view didn't come across. And so we were kind of, blessed with the opportunity to see Tristan 20, 40, times over. I'm so excited to see what's next for him. And this is just an incredible, I'm just so excited for the future of food, if I'm to be a bit lame about it.
I think I completely agree. And to that point, we have to thank all of the chefs on this season, because they really all came to play. They were cute as hell. And they just, they all made us excited about the future of food. And it has been such a joy to watch them. And so that brings us to the end, but in the spirit of being so appreciative to these chefs and in the spirit of the pod, without further ado, we bring you our compliments to the chefs of Top Chef Season 22. Bits, would you like to take it away?
I'll take it away. First up, compliments to Henry for keeping his chill when he couldn't keep his me's. Also for using his platform to bring visibility to a cause that we care deeply about, which is normalizing crying in the bathroom.
Thank you for your service, Henry. Shout out to Corwin Hemming for giving us the realest interview and having the PR minders have to come on the call and say, please stop giving any spoilers. We edited it out. But thank you for your interview and being the only person on earth named Corwin Hemming.
I love it. Compliments to Kat Turner for making Nancy and I actually want to visit LA. But now we don't have to, right? Because we can just go to Ojai. But generally being the coolest broad.
Yes, we love you. Shout out to Katiana, the other cat, for absolutely smoking the competition in an impressive run in Last Chance Kitchen and being at the center of all of my Reddit conspiracy theories this season.
Those were running amok. Compliments to Cesar for making us love vegetables and bringing his singular brand of whimsy to food, and for sprouting mung beans under his
bed. I was going to say compliments to his bed, because it's doing double duty.
Doing double dude.
Compliments to Mimi for having an incredible attitude from day one and eliminating the two Canadians in Last Chance Kitchen.
Forgot about that. Okay, compliments to Massimo for being our resident Canada cuisine expert and for reminding us that big personalities aren't just all talk.
Massimo's character arc this season should be studied in universities around the world. Just giving us such good TV. Thank you, Massimo. Compliments to Schwei for his infectious joy, insane flavors, and many scallion pancakes.
Compliments to Tristan for using every word, bite, and ingredient this season to its maximum effect. And frankly, leaving us a bit in awe every time.
Compliments to Vincenzo Lasetto for the Apple Bowl. There are so many things we could compliment him for, but he really did a lot for the culture with Apple Bowl. So thank you. We will never forget you.
Compliments to Paola and for coming into the finale, for repping Ecuadorian food and stunning Tom with her sauce work. Excellent sauces.
Compliments to Lana for keeping it cute while also having an insanely academic approach to cultivating her point of view. Listen to our interview with her.
Compliments to Zubair for seeing the bright side in a flooded restaurant. Also listen to that episode. And turning it into one of Chicago's hottest spots.
Compliments to Bailey Sullivan for keeping it Giro Stravagante from day one.
It's Gorgonza. And finally, compliments to Anya Alwatar for making Danielle Balud say he's never had that of her pinecone jam. And generally just, what I would give to see her Russian point of view in the Canadian wilderness. That
yeah.
That challenge was made for her, but
she would have gone beast mode in Calgary. Anyway. Oh, Bits, this closes out our coverage of season 22.
This closes it out, Nancy. I'm sad to leave, but I'm so excited for what we have going. For those listening all the way to the end, thank you so much for your patronage and your support. If you enjoy this pod, please leave us a review, leave us a rating. We really appreciate it. Follow us on Instagram so you can kind of stay up to date on what's coming next. Like I said, we'll be running a food blockbuster movie series this summer, and we'd love to have you along for that ride. Nancy, anything else?
Oh, it's been a joy. Thank you for listening. And with that, we'll see you next time on Compliments to the Chef.
Bye.